This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Williams in the line, now for Pettersson, right circle. Watched by Uyghur, goes back to Hughes on the point. He takes a wrist shot through traffic. They score! Again to Huberdeau, left circle, passes to the right side for Duclair. Threw it back in front, and they score. Sam Reinhart, top of the crease, as Highmore tried to clear it to the corner. Reinhart was there to bat it home, and the Panthers tie the game at one.
With the instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Barkov is 43.4% in his career in the shootout, with a chance to win it for the Panthers. In alone on Spencer Martin, he scores. Beautiful goal as he went to the backhand with one hand on his...
The official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose 2-1 in a shootout, but what a performance from an undermanned team against the high-powered Florida Panthers. Get a point tonight. Couldn't get the W, but a pretty strong performance from this Vancouver Canucks team. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio and also Corey Hirsch here. We are going to be joined by Canucks players postgame, and we'll hear from head coach Bruce Boudreau. And Hirsch, you mentioned it late as the game came to an end. The Canucks losing a shootout perhaps deserved a better fate, but what a performance and what an effort from every single player on this Canucks team tonight.
Well, it took a full team effort.
Yeah.
They didn't give up any odd man rushes. Their goaltending was good, but when there was a rebound, you know, Canucks got to it, not Florida. Mm-hmm. And you got to help your goalie, and that's what they did. But, I mean, let's not take anything away from Spencer Martin, but that was a full team effort. He played great. He was in good position. And he did not look out of place in the National Hockey League.
Well, you mentioned full team effort, and you're right, not taking anything away from Spencer Martin, because terrific game, especially
Absolutely.
After everything that's gone. He's gone through, and great to see him play as well as he did. But you're right, the Canucks didn't allow life to get too difficult around him. No odd man rushes, and defensive coverage, I thought they did a really good job of taking away the center of the ice and did a really good job of not letting them get inside a lot, especially off the rush, right? And it was a good defensive play by them. Even that goal that happens, it's a broken play. Highmore tips it, and it ends up on Reinhardt's stick, and he scores. So even the goal that got scored was on a bit of a broken play and a good defensive play by a Canucks forward, actually.
It really was. And you know, I still think you give Spencer Martin first start because of, you know, the situation he came in. And but Quinn Hughes was – how good was he tonight?
Terrific.
You know, he had the puck on his stick any time. He used his speed. He was just so good. And Tyler Mott, those are my three stars from the Canucks tonight. Tyler Mott was incredible. He stepped up in a big way. But, I mean, a lot of guys did. But, you know, for me, those are the three guys that really stepped up. And Pettersson, I thought, was good, too. Pettersson had made some little shake and bakes like he does.
Yeah. He looked
and
like the old Pettersson.
Yeah, and that's
again,
what
right?
that's what we want to see. You know, we want to see that confident.
Yeah.
You know.
I think you felt the shorthandedness of the team most towards the end, you know, when they were double shifting the Pettersson line and the Lamico line. And then in overtime, you had Pettersson Besser out there first, but then who are you going to, right? And they're rolling through Barkov, Huberdeau, Duclair, Reinhart, Verhaeghe. Like, you know, it's a bit of an uphill climb, especially at 3-on-3, right?
Yeah, and Brucey Boudreau's looking at, okay, who am I going to put out here now?
Yeah.
And you know what? I give the guys credit. Like, they, you know, like you said, they filled the slot. They filled the middle. They didn't give them anything, you know. And it's time and space. You got to take away time and space from good players, because if you give them any time, they're going to score.
You know, Boudreau talked about it after the Nashville game. Just, you know, these guys got hearts of lions. And
they really do, yeah.
You know, you can appreciate a good effort tonight. They played a smart game. They worked hard, but they worked smart tonight, you know. So it's one thing to just work hard and, you know, throw all your energy out there in 20 seconds and flying all around all over the place, but you're going to get yourself in trouble doing that. I thought they worked hard, but they worked smart tonight.
Well, and if, you know, if they had hearts of lions, what did the Cleveland Browns have this year?
Definitely not. Heart of lions, and definitely not heart of dogs either.
What, was it was it the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, or who else was involved there?
I'd say it was a Scarecrow, scared off all the good football players. That's what it felt like, at least. But you know, I mean, from the effort standpoint, it really is too bad they didn't come away with more than one point tonight, because I really did think they deserved the full two. But considering the degree of difficulty, right, and yes, Florida's playing three games of four nights, they're somewhat fatigued on a western swing, But you're missing three of your best forwards. You're missing your starting goaltender. You're not going to be with them on the game coming up on Sunday as well. You know, for you to get half a point, to get 1 point tonight, that's strong. If you get another result on Sunday, and just push. If you can push through this weekend until you get reinforcements back, that's almost the best thing you can do.
Absolutely. You're going to get those guys back.
Yeah.
You know, but let's talk about a little bit without getting political. The protocols are ridiculous. In the U.S., it's 5 days. In Canada, it's 10. Like, come on. Let's get this together.
Well, what's strange, you know, they could have Demko and Miller back before they have any of Garland,
ridiculous.
Horvat, or Halak back in the lineup.
It is. It's absolutely ridiculous. But you know what? I edge on the... I side on, you know, our people that know what they're doing. But it's, you know, it to me, it's, okay, uncle.
Well, I mean, I understand what you mean because it comes down to federal guidelines versus provincial guidelines.
Yeah.
And provincial guidelines are 5 days. If you test positive, you can clear afterwards. The federal, however, to cross the border is 10 days, 2 weeks. So until that gets figured out, it's going to be an issue at the border here. And you hope that gets figured out, and especially based on everything that was said today by health officials in BC about where this thing is trending and what they're deciding to do about all this, even saying that we're getting to the point where we're treating this like a common cold, so to speak. So I'm with you. If that's the case, we need a uniform regulation across the country, and that should include the border.
Yeah. You know, and I've had friends that – I had one friend that was on a ventilator for like 25 days. So I get the severity of it. However – you know, some guys on the team are like, I had a headache or I had the sniffles, right? And they're not letting them play. And it's like, okay, so how, you know, what do you do? And again, not without getting political, because I've seen both sides. I had a friend that almost died from it.
Right.
But, you know, at what point do we, you know, with players, now these guys are finely tuned athletes. And, you know, I guess that's not up for me to decide because I'm a Western Hockey League graduate and color guy for the Sportsnet 650 radio.
You know what? I do wonder, though, you know, when you think about what this team has gone through this year and Boudreaux coming in and implementing a lot of, you know, new wrinkles to their game, you see the buy-in, you see that they are willing to play and the way they are need to right now to find a way to get results because they're not scoring. And even though Boudreaux came in and they were playing a little bit more aggressive, they still weren't scoring enough goals before. If this team is going to continue to push and get enough points to really push for the playoffs as the season goes on, the thing that's going to help them get there the most is playing sound defensive hockey. They can't make some of the puck management mistakes that they were making towards the end of the game here. And they have really cleaned a lot of that stuff up.
Let's go outside the Canucks locker room. We have Matthew Highmore joining us. Matthew, thanks for joining us here on Sportsnet 650. And, you know, that was a really strong performance from you guys at even strength tonight and overall through 60 minutes. And you obviously, it's always unpredictable once you get to overtime in the shootout. But how did you guys feel about the way you guys played against the Panthers this evening?
I thought we did a pretty good job. Got away from it a little bit there towards the end of the second where we might have turned over a couple too many pucks. But overall, I thought we held them to, you know, basically nothing 5-on-5. And, you know, we played hard and unfortunately just came up a little bit short.
You were on the ice for that that overtime shift, you and Juho Lamico and OEL. Just describe what's going on there for the couple of minutes you were out there.
Yeah, that was, I mean, we just got pinned out there, and sometimes, you know, 3-on-3, you can't do anything about it. So we just stayed inside of all our checks, and realistically, I don't think they really got anything out of it. So certainly a long one. We wanted to get some of our more skilled players back out there, but, you know, we got to shoot out and give ourselves a chance to win.
Well, and, you know, when you look at building on this heading into that next game, how important is it for your group to get this type of result, especially with the reinforcements coming in a couple of days, but just to kind of build on this and have something really to believe in heading into Sunday's game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, no matter who's in the locker room, you know, we miss those guys dearly, but we believe in this locker room no matter who's on the ice that we can win night in, night out. And, you know, we played, I think they're the best team in the league, you know, pretty well tonight and got a point, almost two. We would have really liked that, but, you know, we just continue to build on that. And, you know, our game's coming around. We're playing hard.
Bruce trusted you and Juho and Tyler to try and shut down the Barkov line as as you could, and you shut them down at 5-on-5. I mean, the trust in the from the coach for you guys to do that kind of thing against, you know, one of the most potent lines in the league. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, you know, we're just trying to do our part. I said it kind of in media a couple of days ago. It really doesn't matter what or how we do it, whether it's scoring, blocking shots, doing the little things, whether it's taking down one of the top lines. We just want to contribute to winning, and all three of us just love to win. And, you know, we're just battling out there and playing hard.
How good do you feel about your game and how you're progressing this year, really carving out a role for yourself?
Yeah, I feel pretty good. You know, being out for 8 weeks was tough. But I felt like, you know, a lot of credit goes towards the training staff and skill coach for really keeping me in shape. And, you know, I'm really just happy to help any way I can, contribute. And, you know, we're just trying to win games and claw back into the race here. Feels great though. You know, when we win those games.
Matthew, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck on Sunday, and keep it going.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good night.
You as well. That is Matthew Highmore joining us from the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, I always joke with Bick about this because he's a big Matthew Highmore fan. But, you know, Hershey, he's one of those guys that came over in that trade for Adam Gaudette. And you look at his game, he's not going to be a top six guy. The finishing's not there. But what he has is speed. And he can forecheck well. He can kill some penalties for you. And he has something tangible. And you know, he's showing something. I'm not saying he's going to be a core guy moving forward or have this massive role or whatever, but as far as being a contributor in the bottom six to give you something this team needs with speed, he is providing something.
Yeah, and he he's a depth guy. You can move him up and down the lineup. You can never have too many of those guys, the guys that you can move up and down. So if you know, one line or some of your top players aren't playing well, you move them up, and those are the guys that use their speed to kind of drag them into fights, right? Into the battle of playing hockey. And, you know, it's unfortunate that Highmore doesn't have better hands, because if he did, he'd be, yeah, but that's okay. And I'm not trying to slight him, because, I mean, he's an NHL player. He's a great, you know, it's a great player, but just some guys have better hands than each other. You know, if you've watched me ever play with the NHL alumni group, you guys have seen me, haven't you? Bar down.
Well, you're always. I mean,
bar down.
We were talking.
I just can't skate.
We were talking to Cheech about that yesterday. About, okay, you know, the Canucks have Demko out, Halak out. They may come and tap Hershey on the shoulder. They may come and tap Garrett on the shoulder. Hey. But the thing is, they can only tap you if a forward's out, because you're a sniper now.
What other goalie was in the building tonight? Roberto Luongo, and they're paying him $3 million to get in the damn net, Roberto.
Could you imagine?
We're still paying you. Right? Come on.
A cap recapture penalty.
Right?
Well, think about the two Canucks goalies. I know they showed the graphic on TV, but you know, the two guys that were in net or at least suited up, Spencer Martin and Michael DiPietro, they're making like $800K. And you've got Halak making a couple mil. You've got Demmer making five. Luongo's up in the press box. He's got three against the cap. So
Sat making four point five.
7.5, actually.
Did you say Di Pietro? Did you say it like that? Is that Di Pietro?
Di Pietro.
Di Pietro. He's always got to say it. And
I love it. I love your reels where you'd say the names. I love it. What happened to those?
I got lazy.
You got lazy. You ran out of names.
Yeah.
Well, you got another one. DiPietro.
Well, I
got
to start going through every Italian player in the league, and then we'll figure it out.
Who was your favorite Italian teammate? Do you remember one?
Who did I have as my favorite Italian teammate? That's a very good question. I can't really remember, to be honest. We played Italy in the Olympics in 94. Yeah. And they were all from Toronto.
They're all from Woodbridge.
Yeah, exactly.
It was great. And he'd be like, "Hey, bud, what's going on? I used to play against you." And I'd be like, "Yeah."
I had a couple of friends that ended up going to play over there, and they just absolutely loved it.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
Making six figures playing for Milan. You know,
Milan. Yeah, everybody's played there too.
Yeah.
And I had guys play in other small towns that never got paid.
Still waiting for that paycheck?
They're still waiting. I'm still waiting for the payday by my goalie pads when I moved from Switzerland to Germany. Yeah.
You get paid in boxes of wine. That's,
yeah. That would have worked, because a thing of chicken over there is like $400. It's cheaper to drink.
Maybe not too bad.
Hey?
Yeah. You know, Hershey, before we let you go, I did want to talk about Quinn Hughes for a moment, because I think it kind of gets lost in a game like this. We talk about Spencer Martin, team effort, and some of the other guys, but he really controlled the game from the back end for the Canucks this evening.
No, my God, he was unbelievable. He really was. And, you know, they should have a tracker on him. You know, one of those You're watching it wherever. Yeah. Like, he's all over the place. And the fact that he can be up ice and be the first guy back is incredible. Shows his incredible speed, skating ability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there's two guys, and I've said this, that are nailed down on this team. One is Hughes, the other is Demko. Everybody else, you know, it's possible that, but you do. Those are the two guys you cannot move. You really cannot. And, I mean, Pettersson, he's playing better, of course, but those are the guys that are you got to build your team around.
Hughes makes everything easier for the rest of the team. You know, like that's just how, when he's playing like he was tonight and has been recently, he's as good as there is in the league.
Yeah.
Well, he played 28 minutes tonight, and as far as how much he had the puck on his stick, he had the puck on his stick for about 2 minutes tonight.
Yeah.
2 minutes and 30 seconds, more than any other player in the game tonight. 28 minutes, 2 minutes and 30 seconds with the puck on a stick, and he traveled more feet than any player in this game, 23,718 feet, which was 2,500 feet more than the player who came into second place, who was Sasha Barkov for the Florida Panthers.
He's like the Canucks version of Andrea Pirlo. Okay?
Oh, good Lord.
Central midfielder controlling the game.
Who's the best Italian soccer player right now?
Right now?
Yeah. Oh, right now? It's still, you still got to give it up to...
Ronaldo?
He's Portuguese.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not that dumb.
On that note...
We'll see you later. Oh, there was this,
way to put me in a bad mood.
No, when I was... I got to tell you this story. When I was in Sweden, and on TV they showed the Kiruna up in northern Sweden, where it's like, you know, snows all year round.
I'm sorry.
A great story too.
Bruce Boudreau, the Bruce Boudreau
Come
bump.
On, Bruce.
He bumped you too. Here's head coach Bruce Boudreau at the podium.
Okay, we've got a couple popping in now. We'll take our first one from Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet.
Well, it was a great story tonight for Spencer Martin. Was it a great game for your team, Bruce?
Well, I mean, I would have to classify it as a really good effort. They played very close, as close as you can get to the way we wanted to draw it up. And, boy, you play a really great team, and you're missing a lot of your better players, but everybody stepped up to the plate. Some of the guys played more minutes, I'm sure, than they've ever played at the NHL level before, and they played good. So it was I classify it as you know, when you lose, but when you get a point out of something like that, that's a really good point.
And you had to work a long time as a coach to get your NHL chance as a coach. He's had to work a long time to get another chance as an NHL goalie. Do you appreciate the journey that he's been on to get this opportunity?
Absolutely. I mean, I love when American League players that have played there for a while get opportunities and show what they can do, because a lot of times there's a lot of good players that they get overlooked because of their age or for whatever reason, and they're really good players. And so for Spencer to come in and play a game like that against I think they're the highest scoring team in the league, I thought it was really impressive.
Next up is Patrick Johnston, Post Media.
First, I got to imagine that given how your team played defensively, not a lot of chances for the Panthers. That was just about exactly what you were hoping for from them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought we bottled them up pretty good, especially the first two periods. And, I mean, we sagged a little bit in the third, and sometimes that happens when they pushed in their team with a lot of wins, and we were defending more than trying to score, I think, which, you know, you don't want to happen, but it does happen. And overall, I thought we played as well as we could play under the circumstances.
Lamico, Highmore, and OEL got stuck out there for about 3 minutes, I think, in overtime. How did they look in the dressing room afterwards? Are they able to stand up?
I'm sure that they were pretty tired. I didn't really focus on looking at them, but I mean, that's you know, they kept them to the outside that whole time, and they went through three changes, and that's, you know, that's really smart defensive hockey. So I mean, they just didn't have the energy to get any recoveries on any loose pucks, and that's unfortunate. But they did what they had to do to preserve them not from scoring.
We'll take a couple more here. We'll start with Farhan Lalji, TSN.
Bruce, just to follow up that question about that shift, when you've got Highmore and Lamico that are out, they're players that probably aren't used to that role, and you've also got some young guys that might be a little more dynamic. Take me through that decision. Is it just more a case of trust in terms of knowing what you've got with veteran players?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was on overtime. You look for speed, you know. I mean, and those guys that shut down Barkov's line probably played against them almost every shift tonight. And I just thought, okay, if we could get through that shift on the usual 40 seconds and then come out with Petey and whoever, then we would have been had a chance on the offense. But and that's what also the reason I had Mott and Highmore out there, maybe the two fastest skaters we had. So if they did get an opportunity, they could have beaten the guys down the ice. But I mean, a lot of guys, when you're missing Horvat and whether it's and Miller and Garland and some of your offensive players, I mean, some of the guys that never get a chance to play in overtime, we're getting a chance today.
You also talked in the morning about how you expected Petey and his line to play a lot more. And I think he was at around the 20-minute mark with about 5 minutes to go in regulation, probably plays more if it's not for that 3-minute shift in overtime. And also Hughes logged heavy minutes against a pretty good offensive team. Just what'd you think of their, how they handled a much bigger workload tonight?
Well, I mean, we'll start with Hughes, and I thought, like almost every game, he's outstanding. I mean, his outlet passes, and when he gets the puck, you can't check him. I mean, he's too wiry or whatever the thing is. So I thought he was great, and he controlled the puck back there when he was on the ice. Petey had some great chances, some great looks. He looked like he was feeling it. It just didn't happen. He made some plays to players that didn't score. But again, I think he was 22-35, if I look correctly, out there. And it's a lot of ice time for him. So, he's just over this last few games, he's gotten better and better and better. So hopefully he can continue that upward swing.
Next up is Gemma Karsten-Smith, Canadian Press.
Hi, Coach. What does a result like this, under the circumstances where you are missing five key guys, what does this kind of result do for your team as a whole?
Well, I hope it gives them belief that when they play the right way, and we did play the right way tonight, that you can play with anybody. And that's pretty well what the message is. I mean, we played a hungry team tonight that were determined, coming off a 6-0 win in Ottawa and Edmonton, they were determined to win this game. I'm sure they're thinking, okay, our road record isn't as good as our home record. And they just beat us a week ago, and they played really hard, and we just stymied them at every corner, I thought. And in the first and second period, I'm pretty sure we outchanced them, and we could have built the lead up, but we just didn't. So that being said, I mean, we played well. They got championship caliber players in their team, and they came through at the end.
And can you talk about what the atmosphere was like in the building tonight? Obviously only half capacity, but you're back home.
Yeah, I think the people in Vancouver were just as happy to see us play as we were to be home here. It's tough when you play 9 straight games on the road. But we're very appreciative of what the fans, the amount of cheering they did and everything else. And can only imagine if we win consistently and they start putting 18,000 people in this building, what it's going to sound like.
Okay, thanks, everyone. We'll leave it there for tonight.
That is Canucks head coach Bruce Boudreau, who met with the media right after the game, after the Canucks lose 2-1 in a shootout against the Panthers on home ice. It is Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio on the Canucks Center postgame show, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. 650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. We'll get to your reaction before we go to break and get to our listener reaction coming up. Just a quick thought on what Bruce Boudreau had to say, and I like what he mentioned at the end. When you play the right way, you can play with anyone. And that is often lip service, and this team was undermanned, but it was something to believe in. But they actually did, as far as play the better game. Boudreaux is absolutely right. The Canucks did outchance the Florida Panthers tonight, especially in the first and second period. At even strength, they had more high-danger scoring chances, and the whole expected goal stat was in the Canucks' favor. Territorially, they spent just as much time in the offensive zone as they spent in their own zone. That was a strong team performance from the Canucks this evening.
You know, whether the Panthers were tired or they were taking it easy on the Canucks, I don't care. You know, this Canucks team, undermanned, found a way to tip the scale in their favor, and that's an incredible feat by them tonight. They deserved a better result, needed more finishers, but if you start adding the other pieces back into this lineup and they keep playing this way, now they're going to see a lot of wins come their way through the end of the season. It's a monumental climb to get to the playoffs, so don't even think about that. But if they keep playing like that, they're going to get a lot of results.
Yeah, and can they keep it going? Well, not a bad run under Bruce Boudreaux. We'll get to your reaction. Grab a phone line. Get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. And more is coming up on the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. And home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now, more of the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks Postgame Show. Join the discussion. Text us at 650-650 or call us at 604-280-0650. This is the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to Hughes on the line now for Pettersson, right circle. Watched by Weegar, goes back to Hughes on the point. He takes a wrist shot through traffic. They score!
Canucks lose 2-1 in a shootout, but a gutsy performance. Outplayed the Florida Panthers at even strength. Came up short in a shootout, but did collect a point. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. Phone boards are open, 604-280-0650. You're toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We'll go to the phone boards coming up in a couple of minutes, Dan. But what is happening on a Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650 tonight?
A lot of love for the Canucks and the effort they put out tonight against the high-level Florida Panthers. Tones was at the game, and they played as hard and as well as you could have hoped. Dino and Van is saying, I don't think I've ever enjoyed watching Dump and Chase as much as I did tonight. What an effort by the Canucks. Big point. So many unfamiliar names. It was kind of like a preseason game. I wonder if the Oilers would be willing to give up a right shot D and a draft pick for Spencer Martin. That's Dino and Van. A couple of those texts coming in on, does the strong game of Martin increase the chances of Halak getting moved? So Rob the Plumber came in with that question, a couple of others as well. It's one game. Spencer Martin was real good tonight, but let's see where it goes. He's going to get another start probably on Sunday.
Well, two things, right? You're right. Why wouldn't you start him on Sunday? But Halak also has a no-move clause.
Yep.
That complicates things. And like Elliot Friedman reported, Halak is right now unwilling to waive his no-movement clause. The Canucks are in a playoff race. You, as we've seen with protocol, you kind of need to have another goalie. So I'm not sure Spencer Martin playing well all of a sudden frees up Yaro Halak, because it comes down to whether he was willing to waive his no-movement clause or not. And I'm not sure the Canucks are going to squeeze him so he moves to the no-move clause. So I'm not sure Spencer Martin's play really means Yaro Halak is going anywhere. I think the best way to do that would be essentially to be like, yeah, you know, Spencer, you're going to be the guy. Yaro, you're going down to the minors. And I'm not sure they're going to do that. Can it happen? I think a Yaro trade possibility becomes a more likelihood if the Canucks are out of the playoff picture. But as we stand, with everything going on protocol and players not being available, I'm not sure this performance tonight really changes the equation as far as the decision they make on the goaltenders.
Yeah, and I don't see why it would. Look, Spencer Martin was solid tonight, as good a performance as you could have asked for from the goaltender. But the reality is, you know, you've got two veteran guys. You know, you've got a young hotshot in Demko already, and you've got a veteran guy who you gave a no-move clause because he had lots of competition elsewhere, and he, you know, took the reason he's in Vancouver is one of the reasons is that no-move clause. So to think that it's going to be that easy to just move him along. I think it's way too early to say any of that.
Yeah, I do agree with that. All right, we'll come back to more of your text messages as the show goes on. Anissa in Surrey says, Deaky Pete is coming back, folks. Yes, he certainly looked alive and on top of his game tonight. Yeah, he was fantastic. And we'll get to more of your text messages as the show goes on. But let's go to the phone board, 604-280-0650. You're toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We go to our friend Details, who is in Vancouver from Nanaimo. Details, my friend, what you got for us tonight?
Well, boys, I mean, Spencer Martin, for the first time playing in an NHL game for, what, 4.5 years, I believe it was. I was fortunate enough to be on the glass tonight, fellas. So, to see...
I think we just lost Details. Well, let's continue on the phone boards. Let's go to Kevin in Burnaby, who called in. Kevin, thanks for holding on to your phone line patiently. What do you got for us tonight?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's going on, my friend? Yeah, man. Good. What you got?
I've played hockey my whole life, high level. I got to tell you right now, I've never been more proud of the Canucks than I've been now. I swear to God. The performance that goalie put in tonight and the team without their best players was unbelievable. That shows you the structure and the team is completely changing. I was very proud, but to say for one, because that's the best team in the league. They could have been blown. If that first shot goes in, the next one goes in, the next one goes in, the next one goes in. We're blown out of the water. We're having a different conversation right now. But I don't think you guys are giving enough props to that young guy, Martin, because he needs props, because he kept him in there. All right, boss?
All right, Kevin. All right, thanks Kevin. For the phone call. I think we are praising Spencer Martin quite a bit with how he played.
Like, do we just need to spend the next hour saying how great Spencer Martin was tonight?
Give him the Vezina. Is that enough praise?
Yeah, Spencer Martin was great tonight, man. You don't have any qualms with how any effort the Canucks put out tonight.
He made a number of high-level saves, but to the point that Kevin himself made, he said he's never been more proud because of how the Canucks were playing with their structure and how it's changing in a big way. And that structure tonight was very strong by the Canucks. So Spencer Martin was terrific, but they don't win this game if it wasn't for the entire team coming together the way they did. Spencer Martin, he's the first star for a reason, but the reason they were able to take advantage of Spencer Martin's good play is because they didn't allow him to be under siege all night. They didn't allow a ton of high-danger chances. Like Hirsch mentioned, nothing in transition, two-on-ones and odd-man rushes that really expose a goaltender. Not a ton of east-west passes and then a shot. The Canucks did a good job of collapsing, but also not allowing the Florida Panthers to get to the middle of the net. And it was throughout the game. There was one play we talked about earlier which stood out to me was Sasha Barkov, an absolute force. You see what he can do, but he wasn't able to have his way to drive to the net as much as he usually does. There was one play where Tyler Myers was defending him in transition, and I turned to you. I'm like, oh, this might be dicey. Yeah. And Myers stuck with him stride for stride and angled him away from the net into the far boards. And that's the type of defensive play you needed tonight. Not allow them to get an inch. Not allow them to get an edge. And the way the Canucks played with their structure, how disciplined they were. And you made the point that they were aggressive on their forecheck, but they were also very disciplined. They had a third man hide the entire game, and they didn't really go down low unless they had a chance to get the puck. That means good structure, good buy-in, but really, they were really disciplined with how they played the game tonight.
And they had to be, and they knew they had to be. There's so much to like about the Canucks game. You know, I think about the goal that goes in for the Panthers. It's early in the third period. You had a 1-0 lead. It's an awful call on Nils Höglander. Let's be honest about it. It's a phantom trip that they get him on because NHL referee code is you've got to even up the penalties at some point or at least get it close to that. And the Canucks had a few extra opportunities than Florida did, and they scored the one deciding goal at the time on the power play. So I get it. Whatever. It's normal NHL habit. And then you're killing it off pretty well. Panthers had a couple of chances as they normally would because of their immense talent. But you make a good play on the thing that ends up being a goal in Matthew Highmore. He knocks the pass down from getting across the ice, which is what you're always trying to do. But instead it lands right on the foot or right on the stick of Sam Reinhart. And you end up being at a tie game. I've seen this team, you know, kind of, I don't want to say turtle, but, you know, they've you know, had those moments happen against them, and then they let it snowball and it compounds, and maybe they'll give up the second goal. They did that last week in Florida, mm-hmm. where they give up the third goal to Huberdeau. 26 seconds later, Max Mammon scores because of some shoddy defensive play, and it just not great, you know? But they didn't let that happen. They didn't let Florida give them that second punch. And I think, you know, these are real important development steps for this mm-hmm. team as a whole that they're taking under Boudreau, where, you know, Travis Green was talking for over a year about how mentally fragile the team could be at times. You know, I'm not seeing that anymore or as much from this Canucks team. They have a will, they have a want, they have some heart. Like, yes, those are all intangible things, but it did a lot of good things for them tonight that they just kept pressing, they kept frustrating Florida, and they end up being the better team on the whole and not giving up a 5-on-5 goal against the best offense in the league with a severely undermanned roster. That's a pretty impressive performance by Vancouver.
Very impressive overall team performance tonight against Florida Panthers. Jay in Poco says, this is ridiculous. Deaky Pete did not show up tonight. Stop it. If he wouldn't have blown it in the shootout with a slow, barely skating, unimaginative shot, Petey had one shot on goal. He was mediocre tonight. Stop it. He was not mediocre tonight. And if you were in the building watching Elias Pettersson play, you would not be saying he was mediocre tonight.
Jay and Poco watched the shootout. He didn't watch the game. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know how you could watch Elias Pettersson tonight and not be impressed with his game.
He was on it tonight, and especially with the back checking too, how many times he helped the team get out of danger, how many chances they created. That line tonight had a very strong performance, and it played some really tough minutes this evening.
How many calls did we take last week? Pettersson's too easy to knock off the puck. He went into board battles with Sasha Barkov on numerous occasions tonight and came out with the puck. Sasha freaking Barkov. Okay? I don't know what people want from Elias Pettersson other than him looking like the best forward on the team by a country mile. Like, he was that tonight. He created opportunities for his teammates. He helped the power play where they should have scored in that third period opportunity that they had. The plays he was making, the way he was extending offensive opportunities for the Vancouver Canucks. Subtle plays he made in his defensive zone to help the Canucks break out clean.
Yes.
So that they could have and carry some neutral zone speed and then, you know, gain the offensive zone. Like, these, like, so many little things that make Elias Pettersson a very good player in this league, he was doing tonight. Like, I'm sorry if Jay and Poco, like, all you're doing is looking at the box score and being like, oh, if he doesn't have two goals and an assist, then he had a crap night. Like, no, that's not how this works. Like, if you're going to watch the game, not just the shootout attempt where Pettersson is doing what he normally does, and that's wait for the goalie to make a move, and then he snipes the hole that opens up. I mean, you can't judge a player on a shootout attempt. Give me a break. It's a gimmick at the end of the game to decide an extra point. We all know it. Don't judge a player's game on what happened in the shootout. Stop it.
And how much did we talk about Pettersson? It's like, hey, it's not just about the points. You got to do other things too. Bring your overall game back and we'll talk about it. And it's like the overall game's there. And you're so right about how even defensively, how many times he helped alleviate pressure and he beat the forecheck coming in and helped the team get out. But also, how many times did he help maintain zone pressure by not getting the puck knocked off his stick? And how many times he was pressed mm-hmm. on the power play where a puck was in his skates and he found a way to dangle a guy and keep the puck in? In a game like this tonight, two things were critical. How to get out of your own zone effectively, not to get run in, and spend as much time as you can in the opposite zone. Because if you can do those two things, you take pressure off your goaltender, you make the game a bit shorter, you create less events for and against, and it helps you to perhaps win the hockey game. And that's what they did tonight. And for you to do that, you needed to find guys and players to do their best to help you through those situations. And I thought Pettersson played really strong with that team game. And when it came to overall high danger scoring chances, there were 9 combined for both teams.
Yeah.
9 for both teams. 6 for the Canucks, 3 for the Florida Panthers. That's a very low event hockey game, which means not a lot was happening outside of trying to not make mistakes, play a hard game, and try to put pressure on them. And I think what Boudreau also mentioned, which was spot on, obviously, well, he would know, they stymied the Panthers a lot with their speed and their press, right? The forecheck they had, it was all over the ice at the neutral zone, and part of that was Pettersson. Every single player played the team game tonight and did everything they can just to win the hockey game, to not make mistakes. And if you want to judge Pettersson on, oh, he didn't have this high-flying game, the Canucks weren't playing a high-flying style. It was all about how do you win each shift or push each shift. And that's what they did tonight. And I thought Pettersson was very strong in how he did that with his line this evening.
Pettersson, his game has come so far in 1 week. You're seeing him play with the conviction you used to see him play with the freedom you used to see him play with, the confidence you used to see him play with. You have to be able to realize that Elias Pettersson, before last Thursday in Tampa Bay, was still looking like the player we were trying to figure out, when is he going to come out of the slump. Mm-hmm. He's gotten better each game since. Since they moved him to the wing last Thursday against Tampa, that was the game I first saw it starting to come.
Yeah.
Then he got better. Saturday, hits a post in Carolina. Gets better on Sunday, scores two goals against Washington. Gets better against Nashville. The entire game is revolving around him. Could have had three assists. Hits a post, scores a goal himself. And then tonight, you know, he was the Canucks' most dangerous offensive forward, creating on the power play. You know, he doesn't get an assist on the power play goal, but it's his quick movement with Quinn Hughes that creates the offensive opportunity and the space for Quinn to get the shot off at the point, which eventually gets tipped by Tanner Pearson and banks off of Chiasson and into the net for the goal, the only Canucks goal on the night. I mean, Elias Pettersson is continuously coming out of it. And Bruce Boudreaux, if you don't trust me, Bruce Boudreaux said it himself. He's getting better and better, and we hope this continues for him, that he continues to grow, because this is the Pettersson you've been wanting to see all season long. And what makes Elias Pettersson such a dynamic forward, he may not win an Art Ross trophy in his career. He's not going to score with the frequency that a Connor McDavid does or a Nikita Kucherov does. At least I don't think so. But we all marvel at Sasha Barkov, who puts up maybe 90, 100 points, but he has won a Selke trophy. He's dynamic both ends of the ice. And that's what you hope Pettersson eventually tops out as at his peak for me. And we've talked about this a lot, Sat. It's not just about what he does offensively, but it's that he can control the game at both ends of the ice.
He can. And the thing is, and Jay Pokal texted in and said, wake up, Riccio. We don't pay him to do little things, Louis. We pay him to put up points on the board. He's got 3 goals in his last 3 games. Right? He had 2 goals against Washington. He had 1 goal against Nashville. No points tonight. But on the power play, he doesn't get the point because the puck goes off Chiasson after that tip. And him and Quinn Hughes made a great interplay to get that shot off for Quinn Hughes. And Pearson tips it and goes off Chiasson and goes in.
The pass he makes to Hoglander, springing the breakaway, man.
That goes in. We're talking about a point. And you're not having that conversation, right? That's what I always talk about. It's like you talk about the process. How many times what could have happened? How many chances did you create? And in a game where not a lot happened, the Canucks had 6 high-danger scoring chances all game. 2 of them happened when Pettersson was on the ice.
Yeah.
A third of your high-danger scoring chances were a direct result of Elias Pettersson.
In a game you wanted to slow it down and, you know, have it be a low-event game. That's what Bruce Boudreaux tried to do tonight. The Canucks bought in, and they got it.
Listen, earlier this season he was struggling. We talked about it. But we talk about current form and process. 3 goals in his last 3 games, I'm not going to sit here and cry about the bottom line.
I did nothing but critique Pettersson for most of the early part of the season. I also compared him to the Titanic last week, said, I'm going down with the ship if this is how Pettersson keeps playing.
Yeah.
But he's not playing like that right now. He is afloat and much better than that at this point in time. So, look, Jay, if you're upset that Elias Pettersson makes $7 million a year and you expect him to score 75 goals in order to earn that contract, I'm sorry. That's a you thing. That's not an Elias Pettersson thing.
No, he did struggle earlier this season. If you talk about it then, that's fine. As far as recent games go, Got to be fair about those performances. We'll get back to more of your text messages and your phone calls on the other side. Hold on to your phone lines. I see them, Kevin, including you. Hold on. We'll get to you guys as the show goes on here. It is Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics. Do your feet hurt? Kintec can help. Talk to a fitting expert today at 11 Lower Mainland locations or online at kintec.net right here on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to the Kintec Footwear and Orthotics Canucks Postgame Show. This is where you talk Canucks on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, I just felt incredibly blessed just to know how hard it is to get to this level and, you know, how many experiences it takes to get opportunities. And, it's hard to put into one answer for you, but it felt incredible to get an opportunity.
That is Canucks netminder Spencer Martin. 33 saves, first star for the Canucks tonight. Unfortunately, Canucks lose 2-1 in a shootout, but not because of Spencer Martin. Terrific performance from the netminder between the pipes. We'll play his full comments coming up here in a few minutes. It is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. All right, before we go to the text inbox, let's go back to the phone boards. We have people waiting patiently to get on. Let's go to Ben, who's on the phone. Ben, thanks for calling in. And what do you have for us tonight?
Hey, guys. Thank you so much. So I was at the game today, and I just wanted to note on something. You know, we talk about consistency that we're always looking for. You know, and I think he's been amazing, even since the bubble. But Tyler Mott, an absolute beauty on the ice. And just, you know, he's a great grinder. And I think, you know, for what we're paying him, and what we're seeing on the ice, you know, every night, you know, that's just someone I think that would, you know, we would really, really hate to see go, you know, when the trade deadline comes. And, you know, I think we should definitely look towards keeping him because, you know, I think he needs some credit where credit is due. That's all. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. And as far as Tyler Mott goes, his speed, his tenacity, what he brings to this lineup, I can understand what Ben's getting at. And I'm not against the notion of trying to find a way to keep Tyler Mott because he's still not too old, right? And his game is evolving and getting a bit better as time goes on, and he can play a few different roles for you. The question ultimately comes down to how much does that cost?
Yeah.
And considering where the Canucks are as a team and where they're trying to trend towards and how many players they have with big tickets on their books and even guys with medium tickets on the books for a few more years, what's the price you're willing to pay him, and what can you actually afford to do? And can you do anything without moving somebody out? And that's kind of the question around Tyler Mott. But I wouldn't be surprised if Rutherford and Boudreau watch Mott, especially now recently, and look at it and say, he's the kind of guy we like. This is the kind of guy we want to have on our roster that has speed and can do some of the things we want to see them be able to do.
You love to have players with speed, especially because this Canucks lineup doesn't have a ton of it. I think that's one of the reasons we notice Tyler Mott's speed so much on this roster. I liked a lot of his game tonight. Again, I feel like he's working to get more offense, too. It's almost like he recognized there's some players out of the lineup, and maybe I've got to do more to try and get some offense going. He tried to drive the net on a couple of occasions and make some things happen offensively. It didn't end up working out, obviously, but you know that line again was really strong, forced Andrew Brunette to change up his top line and put Huberdeau and Barkov together towards the end of the game. Look, couple of things. If you could get a first, or you're not going to get a first round pick for Tyler Mott. If you could get a second round pick for Tyler Mott at the deadline, hard to turn down. Also knowing that you're probably going to have to pay him $2.5-ish million.
Well,
in the offseason.
Here's the thing. If you look at his career totals and how much he scored and everything, it's not enough to really demand $2.5 million on the surface. But why he might get that number is because he's an unrestricted free agent who's 26, and teams value guys that can bring some of the things that he brings. And I'm not sure he gets 2.5 ultimately, but you're talking about a guy that can probably get close to $2 million. Right, that's kind of the number, like anywhere from 1.75 to 2.25. That to me is the range that Moss probably going to fall into this offseason somewhere. And so, I don't see it being under two.
Could you do something like Callie Yarncroke, you know, 4-year, $2 million per type of thing?
I mean, those types of deals are possible. The thing, though, is
he's a player that get – like, he hasn't been able to stay in the lineup enough.
And that's the thing.
Which does
– a couple serious injuries,
yeah,
too.
Kind of, you know, it is one of those things you have to think about if you're going to offer this player a term-ish deal. And look, Rutherford's not afraid to give players like Mott big contracts. The best example is Brandon Tanev. And I don't know if any of us really loved the Brandon Tanev deal when he got it in Pittsburgh, 6 years. What's the cap charge? Like 3.5 or 3.6, something like that for Tanev. He was coming off a really strong year in Winnipeg where good penalty killer, ton of speed, does a lot of things well, good defensively, like all of the things that Tyler Mott does. And out of nowhere, free agency day comes around. You're like, Brandon Tanev got what?
Yeah.
So I don't think Rutherford is opposed to giving these types of players term and a deal, but you still have to be careful with it. And it's not just about the contract. It's about weighing the other options that you have available to you, whether that's the draft pick, the future salary cap space, whatever it may be.
And I wonder, too, just the whole team speed aspect.
Yeah.
Right? And you do that, you have to replace him. But I just think it's hard for you to keep Mott unless you move somebody out.
Yeah.
Right? And if you move a bigger ticket item out and you get futures, that may open up a door. I just think it's tough to give him the contract that he might get in the free agent market unless you make some changes. But just to answer Ben's question, Mott does deserve some credit, and we'll see what happens with him as time goes on. Before we go and play the Spencer Martin audio, you do want to hear what he had to say after helping the Canucks win 2-1. What's happening on the text inbox? Dunbar Lumber here, Dan.
Well, a lot of people reacting to Jay and Poco's earlier text, including Jay and Poco himself. But some of the responses have been pretty interesting. Burnaby Ken, okay, guys, I like Pedersen's recent games too. He's rising stock, and he was good tonight. But I can't say I saw all of the great things you saw tonight either. Perhaps somebody's overdosing on Petey pills. Another one, leave Petey alone, Cam and Vic. Another one, unsigned. Petey megged a grown-ass man tonight. Those are high-confidence moves you love to see. So as has become the joke between us, Sat, it always comes back to Elias Pettersson.
It always comes back to Elias Pettersson. Tonight it came down to Spencer Martin because there's no Thatcher Demko. We always say it comes down to Elias Pettersson because there's Thatcher Demko.
Yes.
Between the pipes, and that gives you a chance in every single hockey game. But we talk about Spencer Martin, and here he is post-game talking about his first start tonight and how he made 33 saves to help the Canucks get a point in a shootout.
It was really exciting to get back in there and get an opportunity, and the way that the guys played and keeping it really simple for me was pretty cool, and it was a good experience. Hopefully we can build off of it.
What was the feeling out there just as the game was getting started? You know, did you have any jitters? Were you feeling a bit nervous? Were you happy that the guys were able to kind of keep controlled early on and you didn't have to face any tough shots right away?
Yeah, I wasn't as amped up as I thought I'd be, given how much it meant to me to get a game. But, you know, like you said, they really kept it simple from the goalie standpoint. So it was they made it easy for me.
Hey, Spencer. I know it's difficult to distill a 5-year journey into one answer, but you know, what did it mean to you to finally get an NHL start again?
Yeah, I just felt incredibly blessed just to know how hard it is to get to this level and you know, how many experiences it takes to get opportunities. And it's hard to put into one answer for you, but it felt incredible to get an opportunity.
Did you ever wonder whether this day would come again? You'd be back in the show.
Yeah, of course. You're never, you don't take it for granted. I got a chance when I was really young to play some games and to get to you know, to play today was really exciting. It was just kind of balancing the excitement and, you know, dealing with the business of playing well.
Hey, Spencer, I want to talk to you about overtime. There was about, I think it was 3 minutes and 14 seconds there where you guys were hemmed in your own end. Tell me about what was going through your mind during that period and how you were feeling physically towards the end there.
It wasn't too bad for my end on that shift because they were just kind of on the perimeter. But for the guys that were out there, I think it was Lammy and somebody else. It must have been a lot harder on them, and they had to go up the ice a few times. But I thought we stayed on the interior and kept them outside, so did a great job.
And what were your thoughts heading into overtime? Sorry, the shootout, especially knowing Barkov is a pretty prolific shootout master.
Yeah, well, we have a ton of skill guys on our team too, so I felt really confident that we could get it done. I'll have to see the replay there, but he made a pretty interesting move. So hopefully it didn't look too bad.
Spencer, what has the experience been like in Abbotsford this season? Kind of earning your ice time when you know you've got a couple of Canucks prospects who have been here a bit longer, who have been kind of labeled for that role and kind of earning that spot for yourself.
Yeah, this organization's rich with goaltending prospects, and you know, to come in and join them and to work with them, it was a good experience. And obviously, kind of got some time at the beginning of the year where I wasn't playing much to work with Clarkey and Sandman and Abbotsford, and that I think is a huge reason why I feel comfortable in the game now.
And with your experience in Abbotsford, was there anything here, like obviously you've played in the NHL before, but with that gap, was there any moment in the game where you kind of went, okay, this is the NHL, the shooters are that much better, they overlap in different ways? Was there any moment in the game that kind of went, this is a step up?
I mean, luckily enough, I was here around the team for the last few weeks, so I think you get to start to adjust. And yeah, definitely the whole game, you know, you understand it's a little bit, they're making really good plays, and but you know, part of it is a little bit easier because it's very organized. So the whole game.
Spencer, you look like a goaltender who's bought into what Curtis Sanford and Dean Clark are selling. When you came here, did you kind of know what they kind of expected of their goaltenders, and how easy or difficult was it for you to kind of integrate those changes into your game?
I knew that they, you know, they had a really good track record with goalies in the past. So I knew that I wanted to buy in. It took some time to fully commit to technically. And I feel extremely bought in now. And I feel like we're just going to keep building on it though.
That is Canucks netminder Spencer Martin. Strong performance for the Canucks between the pipes. Made 33 saves, helped the Canucks get a point in a shootout loss against the Florida Panthers. Probably deserved a better fate, but that is how it came to an end. And, you know, when we talked about this pregame, Dan, I'm a sucker for good stories. Mm-hmm. I love great stories. Who doesn't?
And dogs.
And dogs, of course. I mean, I love dogs most, and then I like good stories. But, you know, I wanted to see, I'm like, you know what, from a sports fan perspective, something to talk about and something to discuss, if Spencer Martin can have a strong game, I'd love to see that happen.
Yeah.
And he had a terrific game for the Canucks. And, you know, when you hear his perspective and him talk about how he's been biding his time, waiting for this opportunity, and how he's just so grateful and feels so blessed to have that chance. I mean, just for a guy who's trying to achieve his dream, I love these types of moments. A guy that got a few games about 4 or 5 years ago, has been toiling in the minors, trying to find a way to get a chance again. He gets that opportunity tonight, and he makes the most of it.
I really want to encourage people to listen to the Wednesday show with Kevin Woodley, hour two of Canuck Central. And he really goes in depth about Martin, the work he's put in with the Canucks organization, and how it's really helped his game. And sometimes for goalies, look, it doesn't happen right away. It's a longer development curve for most goalies than it is other positions. And I'm not trying to say Spencer Martin is going to be the next Jordan Binnington, who came out of nowhere in his mid-20s. But sometimes it takes the right development tools to get the best version of a player. And that can be very specific for goalies, finding the right systems and the right movements that work for them. Mm-hmm. And Spencer Martin has worked tremendously hard to earn the opportunity he got here tonight. The Canucks were one of the last teams in the league to end up using a third goalie this year. But Spencer Martin, coming into the season, we didn't expect him to end up with this kind of a shot. It was likely to be DiPietro, but it's not, because Martin earned it. Mm-hmm. And that can't get lost here. This wasn't, you know, a situation where the Canucks were just so out of it that they had to find somebody to play. Like, Martin earned this chance, and he's earning a lot of clout and maybe his next pro contract as we speak.
Yeah, good for Spencer Martin, but he has another test coming up on Sunday. How do he perform in that game as well? And it's one great game. Now keep adding on it. The Canucks need all the help they can get until Thatcher Demko is good to go, hopefully on Tuesday, but we'll see how that all unfolds.
Well, no Buchnevich on Sunday.
No Buchnevich. That's what Darren Pang told us. So you get a bit of a break, right? But, you know, it's tough. And a lot of good reaction coming in on the text inbox, 650, 650. Ben from Van says, I didn't realize half capacity in the building meant half capacity on the ice too. Missed out on half our team. And, yeah, because of protocol, that's what happened. And Scott in Calgary says, Deaky Pete is back to his dangling ways. I would really like to see a Lotto line back with EP40 in the middle. Dickinson can center the fourth line, and Mott line seems capable of the third line role. And that's Scott in Calgary. And, you know, on the Pedersen front, but on the Mott line front, I know some people were dismayed to see Lamico and Highmore out on in overtime, but when you're undermanned and you're going for speed, I can understand what he was thinking in that spot. The reason they spent so much time on the ice is because they got hemmed in. They couldn't get out for a change. And in overtime, it's a long change. They just couldn't get to their bench.
They ran out of gas, couldn't get to retrievals. But who else are you going to? You're going Petey Besser first.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to eventually maybe get a look for Hoglander, Podkolzin, and Pearson, but
I think they were trying to get that. And in theory, you have Mott, you have Highmore. Those guys have speed, right? So I can understand what he was trying to think in that sense. But we'll talk more about this. We'll play some comments from Tyler Myers, and Ian McIntyre is going to join us, and keep getting those thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650 650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. Thanks for those listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Looking forward to chatting with you on Sunday when the Canucks host the St. Louis Blues. More coming up here locally on the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, and home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
You're listening to the Kintech Footwear and Orthotics Canucks Postgame Show, bringing you the most Canucks coverage in BC, only on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Barkov is 43.4% in his career in the shootout, with a chance to win it for the Panthers. In alone on Spencer Martin, he scores. Beautiful goal as he went to the backhand with one hand on his stick, tucked it past the Canuck netminder, and the Panthers pick up the win tonight in Vancouver, although the Canucks push them all the way to the end of the shootout.
Canucks lose 2-1 in a shootout against the Florida Panthers. Picked up a point, though, with Spencer Martin in goal, and a bunch of players in COVID protocol took advantage against the Florida Panthers team that was playing 3 games in 4 nights with a strong team performance this evening. It is Satyar Shah with Dan Riccio. The Canucks Central Postgame Show is presented by Kintech Footwear and Orthotics. Keep you active on your feet for life.
Sasha Barkov, like, the Canucks did a great job of, like, limiting him tonight, obviously. That shootout, though, it was like, hey, welcome to the show, Spencer Martin. Welcome back to the show. He had a few games with the Colorado Avalanche a few years ago, but you know, we saw Huberto try the Forsberg on him, and then not only does Barkov do the one-hand move, but he also flicks it, you know? So he gets some height on it to get it over the pad of Martin. And I just, you know, not a play you're going to see every day, shootout or not, in the NHL. Sasha Barkov is just something else. You love seeing the best players in the league, and we got to see one tonight.
He was incredible, and especially on the PK, man. I mean, the amount of space he covers and how aggressive he is and how he gets to his spots, an absolute monster. And Anton Lundell is not the next Sasha Barkov, because Barkov's incredible, But Anton Lundell's really good. And you see a lot of similarities with how they play. Good two-way player, young player, but what? And he's also a monster. There's a couple times I'm like, wait, is that okay? That's Lundell. Like for a moment, it made me think: is that Barkov or Lundell? And that's big praise for a rookie.
Every time I've watched the Panthers this year, I've come away being like, "Wow, the Lundell kid is really good," which is frightening to think that the Panthers have that. I can't believe that they call him Baby Barkov, or like that's the name. Panthers fans and Panthers media, however many there are of those things, have actually started to call him Baby Barkov because he's just that impressive. Look, it takes a lot in this league to come in and be a rookie at 20 years old and have success. He's not a high scorer just yet, but Lundell really looks like a guy who's going to drive play for a lot of years.
He is, man. And he's a real strong player for that Florida Panthers team. They're loaded. Canucks did a really good job to get something out of this game. We have Ian McIntyre joining us coming up in a few minutes. But before we do that, let's go check out some of the comments coming in here on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox. Johnny Peralta says, "You two are overlooking the most important fact about Spencer Martin, and that he has the best goalie mask in the league." We talked a lot about that during the intermission, and the question I posed to you and our listeners was, during the second intermission, what's nicer? The save Spencer Martin is making, or his mask? That thing is glorious.
The mask is pretty impressive for Spencer Martin. I said it in the intermission. He kind of looks like Exhibit made his mask, as if it was like made on Pimp My Ride or something like that.
Probably
Pimp the Mask.
Pimp the Mask. Yeah, do it straight up.
How many chrome masks do you see in the National Hockey League? I don't know. Shouts to Johnny Peralta, though. Just happens to have the same name as a former shortstop in the Major Leagues of Baseball. I always used to acquire him in like some random old baseball game because he had really good potential when he was super young. Johnny Peralta. Played with Cleveland for a lot of years. I think he was a Cardinal for a time as well.
You're looking at Cam Bear. Cam has no idea. Cam's not a base guy. I'm in Johnny Peralta, shortstop.
Johnny, but he spelled it with a J-H.
Yes.
So it was Johnny. Like Jahani.
Jahani?
Something.
Jahani, yeah.
Anyways.
Incredible.
I'm trying to make as many baseball references as I can in the same show.
Yes. I mean, I'm always here for a good reference when it comes to baseball. I like the baseball. I always do the wins above replacement ones. All right, we'll talk some more. We'll get some more of your comments, but we promise we'll play back some more player audio. Here is Canucks defenseman Tyler Myers after the 2-1 loss in a shootout.
I thought we played a good hockey game. I mean, it ends in a shootout. Could have gone either way. 1-1 game. I thought it was a gutsy effort by a group tonight. I thought we came out with a good start. And, they're a good team over there. They're, and where they are in the standings, says a lot about what they've done this year. And, I thought we went into the game prepared and handled it well, and it just didn't go our way in the shootout.
What did you think of Spencer Martin's first NHL game in nearly 5 years?
He was awesome. He came in, it looked like he was playing with a ton of confidence. I thought he had an unbelievable game for us, stepped up for us, and it was great to see. It's always, see a story like that. It's pretty cool.
Tyler, you guys had quite an impressive defensive performance in front of Spencer. What was the key there for you guys to keeping them to the outside for the most part?
Keep it simple. Going through so much right now with with the guys we have out, with the new guys that we, had in the lineup tonight that, just as a whole group, we wanted to play a simple game. Thought we did a pretty good job of that. With Marty, stepping up the way he did, I thought as a group, we had a good game.
And even with only, 50% capacity, did you feel the crowd energy out there?
Yeah, it felt like more. I don't know if fans were filtering. More fans were filtering down into the lower bowl or something, but atmosphere was great. We haven't played at home in over a month, so you could tell the fans are excited.
That is Canucks defenseman Tyler Myers after a 2-1 win. And, you know, we saw 50% capacity tonight. I can't wait to see a full building again. Dan, that's what I look forward to seeing here, hopefully when things get a bit better across the province.
9,000 felt like 90,000, you know?
I swear to God.
9,000. Swear to God, 9,000 felt like 90,000, bro. You know, there was times where the crowd was, like, it was just nice to be back in a building and watching hockey and having the reaction, the momentum of the crowd. Different moments, you know, the ref you suck chants are always great. I started laughing a little bit after Martin made 3 or 4 saves. People were still like clapping, like it was like a Bronx cheer after every save he would make.
They're so excited. You know what it was? They wanted to give him confidence. They're like, we want to will you. Yes. We want to will you to a great performance. We believe in you, Spencer.
But I love how the crowd is just like so in tune with like everything that's going on with this Canucks team. And it's not just like, you know, a bunch of business folk in here that are just here to like sell some clientele or whatever. Like they're in and they're invested on the Canucks. And it was so apparent tonight with the 9,000 that were here. And I love that. And the players love that. You know, one thing about this whole debate of like, should they have played against Ottawa? I'm not sure they were even allowed 50% capacity for that Ottawa game. But knowing and speaking to some players that have played in empty barns recently, like in Toronto and stuff like that, players absolutely freaking hate it to play without fans. Like they do. They don't want to go back to what happened last year. Not just because of the revenues and hockey-related revenue and all that. That certainly plays a factor. But they hate not having the energy of the crowd to feed off of at different moments of the game. Or, you know, Tyler Mott throws a big hit on Duclair and you can feel the crowd really getting behind it. You know, just little moments that really bring the intensity of a game up. Because otherwise, it just kind of feels like you're watching a bunch of grown men play hockey. And yeah, they do it at a really high level, but, you know, it's not quite beer league, but it just brings a different level of atmosphere to the game.
Well, it does, and it was nice to see fans back in the building here, and it was only 50% capacity, but it felt a lot better, and that's kind of what the players talked about, and hopefully we see that kind of change, and we'll see what happens by mid-February when there's another update by the province, and we'll see where things are at that stage. But, you know, when it came to the game tonight, the fans were waiting for a big performance from the Canucks, and it wasn't the most entertaining game as far as back-and-forth action went, but it was an intriguing close game that was hard-fought, and it was very entertaining based on just the intensity of it throughout. And I really like the way the Canucks pressed all over the ice. And now we get to do something we haven't done in about a month. That is talk to Ian McIntyre post-game in studio. The quadruple threat. He's TV, he's radio, he's digital, and Hockey Night in Canada.
Darn right. I almost didn't make it here.
What happened?
I saw cold grilled cheese sandwiches.
Oh, I saw.
Next door. And I kind of peeked in to see, like, do they seem anxious for my arrival, or can I just...
You could have. I mean, you can grab it on the way back and eat it.
How old are they?
Not that. Second intermission.
Yeah. A couple hours.
Oh.
It's not too...
Fresh.
You know,
you could probably bring it home, give it a little nuke for 30 seconds, and it would be great.
Home.
Won't even laugh. I mean, in our industry, especially when, you know, we're working or whatever, we'll have food, and it'll sit on the table for about 4 hours, because in between you're trying to eat, but you're, you know, it's hard to get your bites in.
I got to say, Sat's, like, legendary co-host tonight, because, like, I don't know, he would leave the booth for a couple of minutes, like, during a break or something, or... during the first period intermission, he'd always come back with food. It was just like either popcorn or a grilled cheese sandwich. I was like, where is Sat getting all of this stuff
Even
from?
Mini donuts. I brought you mini donuts.
Yeah, he brought me a mini donut. Had Nutella inside. It was amazing.
He knows people. Now, was that mini donut enough for you, Darren?
No, it's never enough.
You probably could have used the full size one, I'm guessing.
I was like, man, this reminds me of Nutella Bombe. I was like, where did they get these? I mean, Jim Rutherford comes into town. We're getting all these kind of treats.
Say that Nutella Bombe again.
Nutella Bombe. You know, they're great little pastries. They're like mini donuts like that. Mm. The Nutella in the middle. You throw it in the microwave for like 20 seconds, and it's like oozing Nutella, and it's just like that's the bomb of it all.
So where should I go to buy fresh pasta? Seriously, that's a serious question to you.
You want fresh pasta?
Fresh pasta.
Like at a restaurant?
No, no, no. Okay. Like stuff that I can take home, make my own sauce, have really good pasta.
I mean, I've usually got it at Granville. There's a couple of spots that'll do it there, but it's really not all that hard to do it yourself, iMac.
I don't know. It looks like you could lose a finger in one of those pasta machines.
Yeah, they look dicey.
Cranking it, it's like, oh, what could possibly go wrong here?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. You want to talk about hockey?
Yeah, let's do that.
you guys have been busy though. While I'm away, I don't know if this sound can come across.
Yes. Yes.
That's the plexiglass next to me.
It's back. The glass.
I don't know if this was union work. It seems a little bit unstable.
Yeah. You know what it looks like? It looks like the Canucks in the first quarter of the season.
iMac and I kind of shared just like a prison movie moment.
Yeah. In the glass.
Made a little fist bump.
It's like that scene from Blood In and Blood Out.
Yeah. I was looking for the phone because there's always a phone here that you talk to the guy through the glass. I mean, I imagine that's what it's like in the big house.
From your vast experience talking to inmates.
I'd like to go in just to get some tats.
Tats.
Just some prison tattoos.
You don't have to go
That would give me street cred when I come out.
I think if you went to prison, I don't know if that'd give people street cred, but people look at you a lot differently. Ian McIntyre, the enforcer.
Oh, man. I don't think I'd last long. I'm just guessing. I probably don't have the aptitude for prison life.
I don't know.
I don't have the skills necessary.
You don't know. I mean, you've seen
Breaking. Hey, back off, or I'll write something about you.
Like, pretty much. The pen is mightier than the sword.
Well, only you can use it as a shank through somebody's jugular. Fountain pens.
Fountain pens.
Fountain pens have never been so important.
You watch Breaking Bad, right? Or you know about Breaking Bad. Listen, if a science teacher can become a drug lord, I'm just saying a scribe could maybe run a prison.
I don't even know what that would look like. I'd have the best cell, and I'd nicer toilet paper or something. I don't know what are the perks of running the prison.
The prison newspaper. What to do on your 1 hour break today?
Yeah, the felt marker, Sharpies aren't going to do any good in there.
No.
Other than you could maybe use them in the prison tats. as far as defending yourself, you'd need a fountain pen.
You know what you would do will be intimidating? Write articles, tattoo articles on people.
Yeah. The Godfather got somebody to help him with it. No, it wasn't a pen. It was glasses.
Yeah.
I'll have to get some eyeglasses too.
You know, every time they show the prison scene in Goodfellas, I'm like, man, that doesn't look so bad. You know, it's like this looks like a great.
Well,
Sunday
afternoon. You'd be right there.
When you mention the prison scene, all I can think about is cutting the onions. That's all I can think about. Cutting the garlic.
Cutting the garlic.
Very thin slices
razor
of garlic.
Thin.
I can picture some other things that are less appealing.
Fair enough.
Again, I'm just guessing. Hello to all the people in the big house listening to us tonight. We hope you've enjoyed the broadcast, and I'm sorry for your troubles. Stay safe.
It's been pretty good so far.
Stay away from guys with pens.
No fountain pens. Could you trade fountain pens for ramen noodles in the big house? I don't know. It's probably a question we don't need to ask. Hearts of Lions, iMac. We talked about that the other night on the post-game show, and this team digging even further to find a way to get results.
Yeah, it was plucky tonight of them. And you know, let's be realistic as well. You know, Florida having played and, you know, they weren't anywhere at their best. But I think you give the Canucks some credit for that too, because Vancouver did, for the most part, restrain them for two periods, certainly in the third. They started to bend a little bit, and it looked like Florida was looking for another gear. But you know, the Spencer Martin story is fantastic in isolation. And that really is a good story. That's one that makes me want to write, you know, the Spencer Martin story. I just wish I had more than a Zoom call with him after the game and 45 minutes to write it. But, I mean, that's a great story in itself. But the way that the Canucks played in front of him was pretty impressive. And I didn't think they had this game in them tonight. Having seen Florida last week, saw what they just did to the Oilers. Mind you, I guess everybody's doing something to the Oilers these days, but I thought the Canucks were going to be in over their head, especially, you know, first game back from a really tough road trip, hadn't played here for a while. I just didn't think that they would have the kind of game that they have, but there's been a whole lot of things that have surprised me since December 5th.
Well, a lot has kind of changed in a positive way here, and we keep kind of waiting, okay, now the games have been postponed, tough road trip coming up, one challenge after another, and more players in protocol. But the fact that they're keeping their heads above water through that five-game road trip, they got 4 points, you won a five, but you got four, you got 1 point tonight. If you can squeeze something out of that game on Sunday against the Blues before you get reinforcements back next week, it keeps you alive in this push.
Well, I think that's always been a key. If you actually want to be a playoff team, you have to find a way to manufacture points in games where you could get none. And it's maybe one of the biggest traits about the teams that fail and those that don't is you look back on all the games where the teams that failed, and the Canucks were one of them the first couple of months. The team failed to get a point in games where they deserved one. You know, where you have a chance to either win the game or you have a late, you're tied late and you give up a late winning goal. And then you look at the teams that are successful, and they're constantly adding to their points balance. And some games are great, but even the games are not great, they find a way to still add to the points balance. And the Canucks, you know, have been finding ways. The road trip, it was 4 points out of 10, but it was 4 points the hard way, you know, having lost the first three and then putting yourself in a position where to really salvage anything out of the trip, you got to win those two games. And they did against very good opponents on the road tonight. They shouldn't, you know, on paper, this shouldn't have been close. You know, this should have been Florida's game. But the Canucks, you know, they did more than just hang in there. They were equally good for 40 minutes. Third period, the Panthers were better. Overtime, the Canucks were caught on that epic shift.
Yeah.
Where I think Lamico played more on that shift than he did in some games early this year.
Yeah.
You know, three-plus minutes. But at the end of the night, they've got a point with five guys in COVID, but it's not just five guys in COVID. It's their MVP goalie and the other guy who would be the safety net if the MVP goalie wasn't available, and three of your best four forwards in protocol, and they're playing a guy in net who hadn't touched an NHL crease in almost 5 years, and he stops 33 out of 34. So a lot of good stuff tonight. More good stuff tonight in this single point than a lot of games that teams win. You know, the Canucks, I think, can have a lot to feel good about.
It's another game where they don't give up a 5-on-5 goal, too, you know. For a team that we expected, to not be good defensively this year, IMAC, especially in the Bruce Boudreaux era. And yes, Thatcher Demko is a big part of it. But especially recently, like, they have been against really top-end teams pretty solid structurally under Bruce Boudreaux here.
Well, Boudreaux is getting some things out of the bottom of the lineup, especially up front, that the Canucks didn't have early on. I'm thinking about how effective Highmore, Mott, and Lamico have been. Now, Mott, of course, was injured most of the time that Travis Green was here this season. He didn't have that benefit. And Highmore was injured a bunch as well. I'm trying to think how many games Highmore got in before he got hurt. There weren't many. So he was gone almost as long as Mott was. And so they're getting marginally a little more out of guys like Dickinson. Chaisson hasn't been a regular, but you're noticing him a little bit again when he is in the lineup. And there were games you didn't notice him at all. But I think the biggest thing is the goaltending that they've received, the emergence or reemergence of a couple of their top players. And you know, Pettersson and Besser were not as good tonight. Especially under the circumstances, I'm sure Boudreau was looking for a little more from that line. But they've been better players recently and more effective players than they were early in the season. And then you go to the defense, and their big three, if we can call it that, with Hughes, OEL, and Myers, their big three is just kind of carrying them along. And they still look vulnerable near the bottom of the lineup. I'm not sure, you know, about this switch recently to have Poolman basically play ahead of Shen. I just don't know that Poolman is a top four guy. Mm-hmm. He seemed to be more comfortable for that stretch when Shen was playing up and playing a little better, that Poolman was the third pairing guy. That seemed to suit him better. But I think those three defensemen at the top, and OEL tonight I thought was fantastic. And I haven't looked at his fancy stats, but the way he competed, you know, that overtime marathon, mm-hmm. that was kind of reflective of his game. The way he competed, and you know, 2 minutes into a 3 minute shift, he's still trying to finish guys physically to dislodge the puck and go the other way. But at the whole time, in the right spot. Very smart. Didn't had a couple of chances. He could have dashed for a change, but it would have led to an outnumbered rush. And he just, you know, with his experience, just kind of regrouped, caught his breath a little bit, and then continued. I thought he was great tonight. But Myers has been a different player the last month than what we saw earlier. And Quinn Hughes is just Quinn Hughes. He's
so good.
I want to say quietly, even though we know how good he is, but I think he's still around the league quietly one of the best defensemen in the league, because, you know, people back east, they just don't see him enough. And he's also got kind of this stigma to overcome now. We've talked a lot about this season, how much better he is defensively. But I think league-wide, he's still not recognized for that. He's still seen as sort of that small offensive guy who plays for the Canucks compared to some of the other great young defensemen in the league. But he's playing about as well as anybody right now.
And the question, too, for this team, bigger picture, one is the GM position. But the other picture, the question is, what does this team do with this roster leading into the trade deadline? You played 40 games. You got 40 points. You're within reach for the postseason here. How valuable do you think it's going to be for this team to keep guys and not make moves if they're in a playoff race? Or do you think the playoff race is not going to really matter as far as decisions just Rutherford may make on this roster?
Well, you want to reward the players for what they've done and show the faith in them or the belief in them that they have shown in themselves and the group. Honestly, I don't see them making any big decisions during the season. I think there could be some really big decisions after the season's over with guys like JT Miller and Brock Besser, maybe even Bo Horvat, but that's hard to imagine Bo Horvat playing elsewhere. But there could be some small decisions. You know, if somebody offers them a second-round pick for Tyler Motte, or if Matthew Highmore continues to play this way, what might somebody want for be willing to give up for him as kind of a fast depth piece on a better team? So I think there could be some little decisions. I'm actually almost a little surprised, and I know Jim Rutherford, when he took over, he told us all he was going to wait to the end of January, wanted to see this trip. But for a guy who made a trade a month all those years in Pittsburgh, the fact that he hasn't done anything yet to me is a little bit surprising, but only when you view it in a void. If you view it in the context of what this team has done, the 8-0-1 start, now 10-3-2, all these difficult circumstances, all these things they've overcome to be 10-3-2, it doesn't surprise me that he's not in a rush to make a lineup change. But I'd be surprised if we get through this deadline
and there isn't a trade or two.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there with Jim Rutherford. And I agree with you that we'll see something, maybe not to the magnitude of the discussions that are being kind of had around the team right now.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, you have to be open when you're whether you're Jim Rutherford or any GM, you have to be open to whatever somebody is pitching. Doesn't mean you're going to accept it, but you can't shut yourself off. I mean, yeah, shut yourself off when people ask about Quinn Hughes, shut yourself off when people ask about Thatcher Demko, but otherwise you listen and you talk. And maybe somebody just absolutely has to have JT Miller, and he's so attractive to them right now, to whatever that team might be, because they'd have him for two playoff runs, guaranteed. And they're willing to give up a lot for that. But I still think that JT Miller, with the season he's having, that's not a decision the Canucks have to make on him this spring or this winter. You can wait until after the season. You can even probably wait until next season, but obviously the longer you wait, probably the less the return will be if you're going to move them along. But I just don't see, especially since the team has dug in so well and they're soldiering on, and still a long way to go before the deadline. So we'll see if they continue to cling to the edges of this race. But I just don't see an urgency that they have to make one of these big moves now. I don't see that.
No, I'm with you on that, and we'll see ultimately what happens. Ian, always a pleasure having you on the show, and we look forward to chatting with you on Sunday as well.
And
the post-game show.
And that grilled cheese is only like 15 minutes older.
Yeah, so you're good.
As a percentage of age from the time that it was created, I think I'm still good.
Yeah, I think you should be fine. Fire it up.
Did you guys test those earlier?
When they were fresher, yes. They were decent. It's grilled cheese.
Okay. Well, there's no bad grilled cheese. You can make extra. You know what the secret is to grilled cheese? I'll tell you, Dan.
What is that? Parmigiano Reggiano.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. On the outside. On the outside.
On the outside. All right. I like the way you think.
On the outside.
Thinking. Parmigiano crusted. Yes. I like it.
Yep. A lot of butter and the Parmesan and fry it to a crisp on the outside. Nice, gooey, warm, melted cheese on the inside.
Now you're
very
talking.
Nice. Instead, I'm going to eat this thing that's been sitting for 2.5 hours.
Godspeed, yes. All right. Ian McIntyre, make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. Always a pleasure. You can listen to him throughout the week on a lot of shows, including Canucks Central, myself, Satyar Shah, and Dan Riccio on Sportsnet 650. Make sure to download and check out the podcast on Apple Podcasts, your favorite podcasters, including Spotify as well. Special thanks to Cam Barra, our producer here, Josh Ellie Wolf back at the radio station, and thanks to everybody listening and chiming in on the show, both on the text inbox and on the phone boards, and to those listening. We appreciate your support and your time, and we can't wait to chat with you on Sunday when the Canucks host the St. Louis Blues. And that's it for the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, keeping you active on your feet for life on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.